Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be welcoming David Nichols. He is the patient and family communications product leader for PerfectServe, and was previously the founder and COO for CareWire. David, thanks for joining me today.
Dr. Nick, thank you. It's a pleasure.
So, for our listeners' benefit, you and I have spent a little bit of time. I'm certainly excited to explore this, but tell us a little bit about CareWire and the journey that got you to this point of being incorporated into a larger organization and some of the steps that got you here.
Well, thank you, Nick. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about CareWire. CareWire started in late 2011. And it was really started after some consultation with some providers here in the Twin Cities, looking at the healthcare experience in the post-Aura world from a patient's point of view. So it was really an opportunity to look back at these organizations from a patient and really understand areas of breakage and confusion from a patient's perspective. And from that process and working with some of these large hospital and clinic systems, the idea was that navigation and education were two areas of opportunity. And so we really formed CareWire to explore those aspects of the patient experience, engaging with patients, giving them what they need to know to be successful when they need to know it, and providing that in very economical chunks. Nudges, if you will. When we started CareWire, when we had the idea of starting CareWire, mobile technology was really, you know, growing as a phenomenon. And we were thinking about using email techniques. We were thinking about using, voice techniques. And we settled on SMS as a key way of getting the messages out to patients, simply because it used something that was already in essentially everybody's pocket, which is a phone. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a smartphone. And SMS had a tremendous ability to alert patients to action, and also by incorporating links and content, engage them in the cause of their health. So CareWire really started as a way of partnering with providers and hospitals, taking their source information with regard to what their patients were supposed to be doing, combining that with recipes of engagement designed to improve their preparation and the recovery after episodes of care, and conducting that automatically. So that was the genesis of CareWire back in late 2011, early 2012. As you know, any startup, we after that time, we built our team, we raised a bit of money. We had some success with some customers here in the Twin Cities and more broadly across the nation and Canada. And really we were looking at our next step about a year ago and thinking about partnerships, thinking about mergers, and thinking about simply doing some additional fundraising. And at that time, we got to know PerfectServe. And PerfectServe painted a very compelling picture about what they termed the care team collaboration platform of the future. Really taking best-in-class clinician collaboration and communication and combining it with the patient element. And more than that, the patient and the family element to enlist patients and families in the overall care system so that they can work and interact with clinicians. So what brings me here today, not as the COO of CareWire or the founder of CareWire, but rather the product leader for patient and family communication for PerfectServe, is really the idea of advancing that vision of bringing clinician communication and collaboration together with patient and family communication to bring about the care team collaboration platform of the future.
So it's interesting, you singing my song when you mentioned nudges, because that's very much another word for incrementalism. Obviously, it's one of my areas of passion and focus, clearly something that you found. I think one of the things that strikes me is that you picked on something that's really quite old technology, SMS, and yet you talk about a vision of the future. How do you reconcile those two sort of strands?
Well, I think it's a combination of ubiquity, practicality, and engagement. So, you know, ubiquity is the mere fact that more and more SMS is the medium that cuts through. We are being deluged by robocalls and robo-phishing and caller ID spoofing. Nobody listens to voicemails anymore. Frankly, you know, nobody really talks on the phone anymore. Their first endeavor is to text. So, you know, it's really kind of one of the last things left. And one of the statistics that's great about SMS is that if you think about getting a text message, and it doesn't matter whether it's from your son, your daughter, your boss, whomever, but 95% of all text messages are read within 5 minutes. So when you compare that to email or voicemail or, you know, going out to your mailbox and picking up a letter, really it's the immediacy that is so effective. And I think the other thing that's interesting about it, and this is what it kind of shares with Twitter, at least kind of the original idea of Twitter, is its economy. It forces brevity and it forces, you know, kind of to the pointness. So I think when you think about it as an alerting medium, where you can deliver an alert through a kind of a common carrier system, where 95% of the time that alert is going to be read within 5 minutes. And then you think about the way that it enforces the economy so that the message really only takes, you know, 5 seconds or less to get into somebody's brain. And then lastly, you think about the way that SMS, because of those two aspects, can be orchestrated, bringing in a time element. So for example, in an email situation or a snail mail situation, a provider might send a packet of information out to a patient a week before an episode of care. Now, that packet of information would include preparation instructions and patient education material. First off, there's a chance that that packet may not ever be opened or received by the patient. But I think more in a more sophisticated way, the problem with that is that you're basically forcing the patient to upload all of that data into their buffer, aka their brain, a week before the episode of care, and then remember the steps that are supposed to occur 3 days before, 2 days before, the day before, etc., which is a lot to ask. It's a lot to ask anybody. And what's interesting about, you know, using SMS and actually orchestrating a recipe of SMS messages over time is that you can deliver the content and the call to action to the patient exactly when it's needed. So the stuff that they need to do 4 days before, the stuff they need to do 2 days before, the stuff you want to make sure that they don't forget the night before, that can be delivered just when it's needed. To prompt, and then to your point, nudge, which I think is a great way of thinking about it.
So it's fascinating to me that one of the things that you focus on, and I had a, I don't want to say issue, but I have to say I rejected the notion of Twitter when they said, no, we're going to expand it to, I think it's 280. They doubled it, you know, normally. And they followed the SMS because it was tied together. And I've always admired Twitter for the forcing of that brevity that, you know, in some instances required some pretty clever usage of abbreviation, dropping vowels and so forth. But that brevity, I think, is absolutely a key element to this that really sort of drives action. And specifically at certain points in time. One of the things that just worries me a little bit about this as I'm thinking about it, and you know, I'm a huge advocate, is as folks listen to this, they go, well, wow, that's a really good idea. And then suddenly everybody jumps into SMS, and does that 95% 5 minute read drop off? Because suddenly, like email, it just becomes, I don't get a lot of spam in text. I get the occasional one, but if I did, Would it now become, how do it, what's going to stop that from sort of developing? Any thoughts around that?
Yeah, it's I think one of the economic terms is the tragedy of the commons, where, you know, we tend to kind of pollute these common spaces. And, you know, one of the things that's a little different about the SMS space as it exists now, and there's a number of different flavors, there's RCS, there's MMS, et cetera. But one of the aspects of the SMS space as it exists now is that there is a small economic hurdle for the organization sending the SMS. So it still does cost a penny or a fraction of a penny to get an SMS message, you know, to where it needs to go. And so that's, you know, different than, you know, potentially some dialing mechanisms and some email mechanisms where it's really, you know, costless to send out those phishing emails and so on. So there is a little bit of a hurdle. And I think that we've been, you know, our success has been really predicated on a couple of things. You know, one is that hurdle being there. And for now, the SMS space not being kind of polluted in the same way as some of these other spaces. It's also enabled by the fact that there are regulations that are relevant to us, like the Telephone Consumer Protection Act and HIPAA, of course, with regard to PHI. And, you know, the regulations, especially the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, have relatively clearly defined safe harbors for texting and even telephonic communication in healthcare that are strictly for healthcare. You know, the general idea is that if, and I don't want to pick anybody, but if a fast food restaurant is sending you out a bunch of unsolicited text messages about BOGOs or coupons, you know, that could be a problem. But if your doctor is sending you out an unsolicited text message trying to make you get well, or trying to let you know that you need a flu shot, or trying to follow up on your care, that exists within a safe harbor. So in summary, I think that there's some minor economic hurdles which make somebody actually have to spend some money to send these messages, which is good. And then secondly, there is some regulation that is relatively strict when it comes to SMS and telephonic communication, but has a, you know, well-defined and tested safe harbor for healthcare communication.
So it's interesting. I think that, you know, the key learning points for me there is that economic hurdle, you know, a cost associated with that that's sufficiently high. So, you know, it's a bit like the supply and demand elasticity that says, you know, if we make it costly enough, it's not effective, which, you know, is good news. I mean, I'm delighted because I love the fact, and, you know, when my mother was alive, that was absolutely, she was a demon with her text messaging. It was astounding. I think it really sort of sat well with her in terms of abbreviations, because she grew up in an era when, you know, the space available for storing information was not as widely used. So she had all sorts of, we can't even decipher some of the things that she's got written down today, because we've lost some of that institutional knowledge that was there. So this is great. So fascinating journey that you've gotten to this point. Tell me a little bit about how did you start? What led you down this pathway? There must have been something that sort of triggered this inflection point that goes, yeah, this is where I need to focus.
Yeah. So, you know, back to, you know, doing some consulting with some of these, you know, large providers, I had previous to that spent almost a decade at a large health insurance company in the Midwest here. And, you know, I was part of some pretty strategic and, you know, interesting projects there, starting new products, starting, you know, small new divisions and so on. One of the last ones I worked on was actually a tremendous failure. And, you know, I won't go into that, but, you know, it was time for, I felt after that, that I had, you know, at least another, I guess, startup experience in me, but maybe not within a large corporation. So, you know, started working with some of these providers directly because, you know, healthcare was changing and there were new, you know, we were moving from fee-for-service to, you know, value-based models and so on. And I sensed that I wanted to learn more about that. And what I learned more about that was that working at this large healthcare insurer, I knew nothing about healthcare. I knew nothing about the delivery of healthcare. I knew nothing about what nurses and doctors did on a day-to-day basis. And so it was fascinating, and I will be forever thankful for the provider community actually inviting, again, this former kind of healthcare insurance guy to actually learn about the delivery of care. And in learning about that, you know, and looking at the patient experience from an outsider coming in and looking at those breakages, you know, we identified, you know, 6 or 8 opportunities. And again, I mentioned around education and navigation. And so, you know, on the heels of that assessment of identifying those breakage areas, those experience breakage areas, and thinking about ways to tackle those, I had some ideas. And I went back to some of these customers that I was working with, and I said, I've got a really good idea. What if we came up with a smart system that had recipes of content, how to get ready for your colonoscopy, how to get ready for your hip replacement, how to prepare your child for a well-child visit, et cetera. We had recipes of content, and then we would email that content out to patients as needed. And so these customers said, well, you know, that's a great idea. That's a great idea, but we have no emails for any of our patients. I said, okay. Well, here's an even better idea. What if we had that content system that would receive data from your source system, like your schedule, so that as somebody was having their colonoscopy or as somebody was having their hip replacement, that content would go out over time, and perhaps it could show up in an app. We would get patients to download apps. They would have a colonoscopy app, they'd have a hip replacement app, and they would just look at those whenever those episodes of care came up. And they said, well, that's a good idea, but we've really been working hard to get, you know, our EMR apps downloaded. We have an app that is specific to our healthcare brand as well that we're trying to get downloaded. And so far, our penetration on apps, our distribution of apps has been something like 7%. 7% of our patients have adopted our app. So I thought to myself, wow, okay, no emails, well, maybe like 5% emails, but no emails, 7% distribution of these apps. Holy smokes, what what is left? I mean, letter writing is probably not going to be very efficient. So I was not a big texter, you know, in 2011. And so I really arrived at it almost as a last resort. I mean, I hate to admit that, but it was kind of, you know, one of the kind of the last remaining vehicles for conveying this information. So I went back and I said, okay, you got the system, you know, you got the episodes. We can create this repository of content. We'll marry those two things up. What about using SMS as the distribution medium? We'll break up all the content. We'll spoon feed it out over time. We'll include links. It'll be just the information the patients need when they need it. It'll be interactive. It'll be highly engaging. And then they said, you know what? That SMS stuff, I think that's a kind of a greasy kid stuff thing. And we don't have any mobile numbers on record. And I said, you know what? Just because you don't have any mobile numbers in your mobile field doesn't mean you don't have any mobile numbers in your record. Let me take some significant number of patients, let's say 5,000 or 10,000, and I'll interrogate the phone numbers that you have, and we'll see how many mobile numbers you have. And so, you know, we completed the BAA and did all of that stuff. I received that information. I automatically scored it. And what I found was from that sample of 10,000 patients, something like 88% of them had a cell phone number in the record already. Now, why was that? Already, even back in 2011, when people were asked, what's your phone number? What's your home phone number? What were they given? They were giving their cell phone number because people were increasingly cutting the cord. So the magic there is that when you think about the vanity of as an organization thinking that you have to spend $1 million on an app, or when you think of the, you know, kind of the fool's errand of capturing emails, which is going to take you years and years and years to do, and you compare that to the fact that organically the majority of your patients have already given you their cell phone number, and it's already in the record, and it can already be used in not only a powerful way, but a compliant way, that's really where the stars align.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the incrementalist, and today I'm talking to David Nichols, the patient and family communications product leader for PerfectServe. We were just talking about the genesis of this and David's experience getting to this point of SMS, which, you know, is truly fascinating, particularly for somebody that was not a texter. But, you know, certainly effective. And what I'd like to do is focus a little bit. Can you share some of the experience, you know, of how that's worked and the nudges that, you know, what's been the experience?
Yeah, so I'd like to focus on kind of three main spaces. One space is something that we call care navigation. And care navigation is really about getting patients ready before an episode of care. And it really doesn't matter whether it's a primary care office visit or whether it's an outpatient surgery. The second area is readmission risk reduction. So this is following up with patients as nurses typically do telephonically, but following up with patients after their ED discharge, their urgent care discharge, or their inpatient discharge, and really triaging them, asking them some very basic questions and seeing if their care is improving or not, seeing if they're doing what's needed to recover, take their medicine and so on, and making sure that they know what their next steps are. And then lastly, the third area is what we call chronic condition or wellness management. This is a form of population health, and this is reaching out and engaging with patients between episodes of care. And I would also add that this could also be members in a healthcare insurance or payer situation. So let me just rattle off some statistics. So getting back to, you know, the overriding statistics around enrollment and opt-out, we typically see across the board over 80% immediate enrollment in our programs that can be as high as 95% if providers want to invest a little bit in taking their organic levels of mobile numbers up to a higher notch. On a corporate basis, and you have to remember that we do about 42,000 automated interactions per day with patients currently. On a corporate basis, our opt-out is about 6%. So that means that of the millions of text messages that we've sent over, you know, the time the CareWire has been around, only 6% of patients or members have ever opted out, which shows you that we're being good stewards of the medium. Looking at care navigation, preparing patients for their visit, we can deliver a 10x increase in access of self-service education and tools. So a lot of providers out there have invested in web pages around education, web pages around self-service medical history, paying your bill online, et cetera. We can increase the number of visits by 10x, up to a 50% improvement in no-show rates, the ability to automatically rebook 75% of no-shows the following day without a nurse or a staff member having to do anything. Looking at readmission risk reduction. So reaching out to patients the day after their discharge and asking them some basic questions like, are you feeling better, the same, or worse? Have you started taking your medication? Do you know the next steps in your care, et cetera? 32% reduction in 30-day readmission rate and a 22% reduction in nurse workload. So those are the use cases that CareWire arrives to PerfectServe with, but there's so much more. And I would look forward to having the opportunity to continue this conversation in 6 or 12 months to talk to you about how patient-family communication really is coming together to create the care team collaboration platform of the future.
So this is fantastic. I think there's lots of potential directions and opportunities to follow up. You know, just off the top of my head, I think about group messaging and the way that, you know, you can incorporate family, you know, some of the potential for that interaction and tracking of all of that. I think most people would you know, be delighted with a 6% opt-out rate. I know that's extraordinarily low. So this is very exciting. It just remains, unfortunately, to thank you. We've run out of time. So I just want to thank you for taking the time to share some of the stories, some of the incremental improvements, your journey to this port. So David, thanks for joining me today.
Dr. Nick, thank you so much. And thank you for letting me share our story of nudges with you.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.